sometimes the serendipity on the radio, and that is happening now, because about 3 weeks ago, when I knew that I was going to do the programme today, I got an email from my friend Giles Brandreth, who said, look, I'm doing this thing in Leicester Square on Tuesday the 23rd. Would you like me to come on? I said, absolutely. Well, the timing couldn't have been better. Why? Because he's also in the know with the royal families. Royal biography, you've written biographies of
the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh and Charles and Camilla.
Well,
there we are. And in fact, I'm very surprised I'm not in the Lindo wing at the moment, acting as birthing partner, given my hands-on familiarity with the subject.
I can't believe that you were present at the birth of your children.
I was present at the birth of all my children, and it got more difficult, intriguingly, with the last one, who is also a Cancerian, whose birthday was just last Thursday. I actually fainted. My wife was, she was not too posh to push. She was doing all the stuff that was necessary, but grateful for the epidural. And I found it all a bit traumatic. Because actually seeing your wife in sort of pain, let's face it, and I know they like to say it's all marvellous. It's actually, oh, God, I'm really feeling for Catherine. Just get it over and done with and take whatever drugs they offer you. Forget this natural childbirth nonsense. Just get on with it and get through it and come out the other side. It's really quite a grim, grim thing.
Now, in your biographies of the Queen, Prince Philip, Camilla and Charles, what have you written about the births of their respective children?
Well, I've written a lot about their childhood, particularly when I was writing about Prince Charles and contrasting him with Prince Philip, because, of course, Prince Philip had a famously difficult, unusual childhood. His grandfather was assassinated, Prince Philip's own father, and the year that Prince Philip was born was arrested, put on trial and a show trial, due to be executed, and the family went into exile. And they lived in exile during Prince Philip's formative years. And then by the time Prince Philip was 9 or 10, his family split up. His mother had a nervous breakdown, ended up in a clinic, and his father floated down to the south of France and ended up living with a girlfriend down there. But he never complains about that childhood. He just accepts it. There's evidence of it. If you look in visitors' books from the 1930s, you see his name in the name column, but in the address column, he's put no fixed abode in a rather childlike hand. But he never talks about that. Prince Charles seems to have had actually a very loving and rather charming childhood, but has complained about it in the past, feeling that he was unloved. He felt, he lay in his cot with the great sides around. And, of course, being a royal child is an unusual experience. I tell the story of Princess Margaret, whose eldest son is called David Linley. And this, I'm assured, is a true story by David Linley's father, that Princess Margaret was very excited that she went to visit Laurence Olivier and his wife, Joan Plowright, when their child, Richard, had recently begun to speak and had uttered his first word. And Richard's first word was, Daddy. And Princess Margaret was able to say, well, David has just spoken his first word, I'm pleased to report. And Lady Olivier said, oh, and Your Royal Highness, what was David's first word? Well, I'm pleased to tell you that David's first word was chandelier. So I imagine David Linley had been lying in the cot, as it were, and the nanny had been pointing up at the chandelier. And that was the first. So royal babies, the rest of us are saying, dada, goo-goo, mama. But royal babies are saying chandelier.
Yes, one suspects that's not quite right. I remember my linguistics degree, and you can't do four-syllable words at that age.
Well, it's a great story, and I was assured by David Linley's father, Lord Snowden, that it is true. So he will not be taking the photographs of the first snap of the baby, but it is extraordinary that a baby is going to be born this week who will be famous the world over from today until they die. Almost nobody else in the world has this burden placed upon their shoulders. It's really it's asking something of somebody. And actually, it's a phenomenon you think about how the Queen has taken it in her stride and doesn't seem to have been spoilt by it at all.
Now, what do you think the prospects of happiness for this baby are? This is a link, Charles.
It's a very, very good link because, funny enough, in my book about the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, I talked about, the Queen, there she is, as we know, driven by duty, sustained by faith. But I asked the question, is she happy? And actually, we know that the Queen is happy. You only need to think about it. Earlier this year, I think both you and I had the privilege of attending Lady Thatcher's funeral, a lady who died aged 87, but whose life had really been empty since she lost the one passion of her life, which was politics. Once that was taken away from her, she really had nothing. And Then, a few months later, I saw a picture of another 87-year-old, the Queen, at Ascot on the day that her horse won that race.
Yeah.
And there was a picture of pure happiness, and she was also 87. And the Queen has a passion. She has her horses. And I think to one of the ways you stay happy is to have a passion. What I'm doing a show, which, as you rightly say, thank you very much, is in Leicester Square. We don't need to plug it because it's sold out, which is marvellous. But I'm going to Edinburgh.
And you didn't
with
even cancel.
I didn't, because it was you. If it had been that man Ferrari, I can't believe they're still using him. But anyway, if it had been him, I cancelled, wouldn't have been in the street. But as it's you, I'm honoured to be here. But I'm coming
said
back.
Said with a smile on your face, I should
with
add.
I'm a huge admirer of Nick's and of his show, and very rarely miss it, but I think you are a nice change of gear, a nice change of tone.
What, reverse?
No. Civilised as opposed to animal. You know, there's a difference. But it's still very good. Both of you are completely listenable too. The point of the story is this. Happiness, I've been exploring it. And I ended up in the psychiatrist's chair with Dr. Anthony.
There's a surprise.
Well, I've got block bookings, so you and Nick can come and be in the next door couches. And the LBC
I might
management.
Need you after this.
Anyway, I went to see Professor Anthony Clare in Dublin. And basically, together, we worked out the 7 secrets of happiness. He said, must there be 7? I said, yes, well, they usually are in the fairy tales. He said, oh, you want to end up happily ever after? I said, I do. And we explored these 7 secrets of happiness. One of them is cultivate a passion. Have an enthusiasm. Have something that will sustain you. Because, you know, Freud famously said that what you need to be happy in life is to love and to work. But people will know, listening to this, that work, sometimes, you know, I was an MP, but the people got rid of me. You know, I was enjoying being an MP and a government whip. They didn't want me. Fair enough. You know, things can go wrong. You can lose your job. You know, your wife can run off with either the postman, the milkman, or in our case, well, let's not go there. So things can go wrong, and therefore you need things to support you, and having a passion is one of them. So what this is about, the show, of course, aims to be more larky than serious, but the book, I hope, is a bit more serious than larky. But it's been a fascinating journey, and I think there are particular challenges that will face the royal baby. Because one of the things that you find is that money doesn't necessarily bring happiness. You know, there are some huge... I mean, you know, is Charles Saatchi happy? We ask ourselves. You know, wealth does not automatically bring happiness. Though the Queen Mother rather charmingly did say to me once, when I was discussing with her how to be happy, she was lived to be 101 and was apparently a happy person. I said, what, Your Majesty, does it take to be happy? She said, oh, to be happy, I think one just has to be content with whatever one's got. And I am.